7:07 p.m. This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, K201HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and KZYX.org on the World Wide Web, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting listener-supported community radio. Good evening. Welcome to KZYX and Z, and it's time for Education Now. The preceding portion of the evening news was brought to you by our members, and thank you. We thank you all, every single one. So let's get on with the music, and tonight we have a very special guest, Marcia Titchener. So on with the music. Here we go.
Road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
Well, good evening again, and welcome to Education Now. Tonight, our guest is Marcia Titchener, longtime Mendocino County sage in residence. Marcia was born in Los Angeles, and she began her passionate research and observations in child development in the LA area. In the promo for the show, I introduced Marcia as a movement specialist, and I wanted to be sure that you all understood that when I say a movement specialist, I mean anyone who is steeped in the development of children would know how essential movement is to learning. And certainly Marcia has done so much research in this area that it's just my pleasure to call her a specialist and bring her here to you this evening. Over the past 30 years, Marcia has been observing and working with children. Her earliest teaching years were in parent-toddler education, preschool programs, and parent co-op preschools in Santa Cruz, California. She eventually found her way to Waldorf Education in Mendocino County, where she has worked as a kindergarten and K through 6th grade teacher and a resource care team teacher. Many questions are going to present themselves to us tonight, and we're going to try to focus, keep our focus on Waldorf and movement. Marcia has worked with the Rudolf Steiner College in Sacramento and mentored with Mary Bowen. Couldn't read my own writing. When I first met Marcia, she was running a Waldorf school in Willits for four-year-olds. And my experience with the students that came to me from her school was just so superior. These students were very conscious of self, themselves in space. They were imaginative. They loved art, music, and rhythm, and were calm. It was just such a pleasure. Whenever one of her children came to me, I was very grateful. And over the years, I got to watch Marcia play soccer. I got to meet her three wonderful children, mother of three, three beautiful children. And tonight, Marcia and I are going to try to keep that focus on movement in general and Waldorf specifically. And there are several questions that present themselves. Now, some of you may not really be familiar with Rudolf Steiner. Rudolf Steiner was born in 1861 and he died in 1925. He was a radical early 20th century philosopher who argued for, pardon me, just 1 minute. Mic three. Okay, there we go. Thank you for the help, Annie. There we go. Thanks. Have we got you, Marcia? Could you speak, Marcia?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Now I'm hoping that everyone can hear Marcia. We'll start that again. Rudolf Steiner was a radical early 20th century philosopher who argued for the existence of a spiritual world perceptible to higher levels of thought. He founded the Anthroposophical Society in 1913 and the first Waldorf School in Stuttgart in 1919, which originally served the children of employees in the Waldorf Astoria cigarette factory. Steiner's interests were far-ranging. He wrote many books on education and architecture and was the father of biodynamic agriculture, which many of you out there are very familiar with. His system of education introduced art, drama, and speech production into all aspects of learning. By the 1950s, the movement he created left a legacy of more than 60 schools across Europe and North America. Well, once again, with great pleasure, here's Marcia Titchener.
Thank you, Athena. That's a very lovely introduction. And I would like to also say that first impulse of Rudolf Steiner's has now grown into over 900 Waldorf schools in 80 countries. There are 200 independent Waldorf schools and early childhood programs in North America. And our founding, our sort of our organizational group that is the cohesive element that holds all those schools in their hearts and helps with so many aspects of Waldorf education is the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America, or OSNA, as we like to call it. And it's a wonderful resource for parents as well, because they now have a new website, and later on we'll fill you in on all of that information. Because they have an awfully lot of good resources for parents, for whatever your interest might be, and in all kinds of areas. So I would love to give you that later. They also publish a magazine called Renewal that is full of wonderful and exciting information about Waldorf education, child rearing, through all the way through the great high school grades. It's just and other wonderful and great aspects of education that are out there today. So it's a good resource to have.
It sounds wonderful. Well, we were going to try to focus on what is the learning movement connection and what can we do as parents and teachers to help children facilitate a healthy unfolding of their development through movement. So the focus on what is that learning movement connection, Marcia?
Well, as most people know, when you watch a small infant, they begin to move right away, and every movement is teaching them something, and they're learning every single day, every single moment. We're born with all of the neurons and all of our all the brain cells that we will have as an adult, and it's found now in new research that we can even grow new ones, as is witnessed from people who have had strokes or other trauma, and that's been some interesting, you know, new scientific research that has come out lately. But what is really fascinating is that we need to really understand that thinking is not just in the head, and learning doesn't happen only in our brain just automatically. It's a process of unfolding, and there are many, many specific things that need to happen for a child to be able to do all of the things that they need to do as they unfold and become that wonderful, upright human being. And we love to see them be able to have the freedom and the creativity to do that. And we can't just fill their heads with information, because that just won't quite cut it. You know, that's not going to help them do the kinds of things that they're going to need to do to be successful and happy and creative in their life. and to be able to function well, to be able to learn to hold a pencil, to read, to balance. When a child is born, they're like a sense organ. They have their skin, their sense of self, their own sense of self, of well-being, is perceived through their skin. What they hear and see influences those neural pathways, and they're building daily, every single movement that they do. When a child is restrained too much, and they're not allowed to really move, say, have a little floor time and play and experience different tactile toys and be able to move those limbs freely of their own will, then they often become a little restrained, and some of those important pathways aren't established or are not as able to dissolve either. Infants are born with a set of reflexes, and those reflexes help a child gain certain things like their laterality, which means are they going to be left-handed or right-handed, and those things have to develop slowly and over time. When you hand an infant a toy, they're going to, when they're first learning to grasp, they'll do it with both hands, and that's because there's an imaginary line that goes down our body that's called the midline, and that midline stays for a while so that child can learn to focus their eyes and their fingertips on the object in front of them, and that so that we wouldn't just become very one-sided and one side of the body would not develop well. So eventually a children will then develop their bilateral sense, and that midline will dissolve. Interestingly enough, it takes some time and repetition over and over again. All of these movements that we see children do through the early years especially.
I love that repetition.
Repetition is so important because that helps teach and structure and encourage those neural pathways to grow. And they so that those synapses can be strong, and they don't fully myelinate until a later age at about 6. So they're still growing, they're still changing, and then they begin to really kind of establish themselves so that you'll see by 6 or 7 a child should have established dominance, which hand they use to write, which foot they use to kick, even which eye and ear that they might use. So those are all very important things that help for learning.
We're really stimulating the audience. There's already people trying to call us, Marcia. We're going to open the lines
right
after the at 7:30. We're going to take a little music break, and then we'll open the lines.
Right.
So hear that,
yeah,
caller.
And I also want to say hello to everyone out there, and it's great that people are interested in this. And Athena and I were talking earlier about how in today's world, we have to establish associations for the sort of like the protection of childhood, you know, for
yes,
the preserve, you know, the alliance for the preservation of childhood. And it sounds sort of dramatic, but in a way it's true. And when you realize that all over the world, children are being rushed and pushed and, you know, molded into little tiny adults, or worse, they can't even go out on the street and play because their neighborhoods are violent, or they've been made into soldiers in countries that are, you know, suffering terrible, terrible wars. So we really have to, even in our own country, watch that we're not taking children from a very, very early age and bringing them into maturation way before they're really ready, and let them unfold naturally and as they should.
There really is an Alliance for Childhood.
There is.
There really is, yeah. The AllianceForChildhood.org. And I've told this audience about it many times. And these professionals in child development, all of them are as upset as Marcia and I are about what's happening and what's going down with children today. And we're just hoping that this show and bringing it to the attention of everyone will get some action going.
Right.
Well, Marcia, there were some things like why can some children skip rope, tie their shoe, walk, run, and balance with grace, yet others struggle and find these movements so challenging?
Well, I think that each child is very different and comes with their own particular set, and we can always have the nature-nurture argument, but at the same, and that can go on for a long time, but I think that each child comes with their own individual set of circumstances, and the reasons can be as varied as every individual. But what we need to do is just look at the child and watch them carefully and see who stands before us. What is that child showing us by their behavior and their movement? When you see a child move in certain ways, you know that they're sending up little flares if they're having difficulty. If a child can talk to you while they tie their shoe, well, it's become automatic, and of course they have it down. It's no longer just a splinter skill. They really know how to do it.
Right.
It's automatic. And then there's the child that will struggle because either they may be all right in their gross motor skills, but they haven't quite kind of gotten all the way down into their fingertips. And they may still be struggling with some of these retained reflexes that I talked about a little bit earlier. Either they have midline difficulties or they might have other difficulties just trying to make those neural messages go from the brain all the way down to the fingertips. And there could be many reasons for that. And there's a lot parents can do, by the way, to help some of those things. And our grandparents, our great-grandmothers were very wise in their little finger games that they would play with children.
Yes.
You know, and those would send messages right up into the vestibular system, which is our system that, and then right on up into the back of the neck, into the vestibular, and all the way up into the brain, so that it says to the child, here you are, here are your fingertips, this is what this means. And vestibular is just another fancy word for balance also. As the child grows, they need to have a sense of themselves in the world, where they are spatially, above, below, forward, and back. And that takes some time and some movement. And if they're always parked in front of a television, if they don't do much movement, and I don't mean movement where they flounce around with scarves. I mean the kind of movement where they really are having a great time. They're climbing, they're jumping, they're skipping. And they're not just because
they're crawling.
Yeah, they're crawling from a very early age. They have that freedom of movement. They're supervised, of course, carefully so that, you know, they don't get in harm's way. But it's very important that they move and that they have opportunity to move and that they have opportunity to imitate meaningful activity.
Yes.
And,
now,
yeah.
Would you say there is something different about why some children enter a room like a small tornado, touching and even crashing into everything, while others seek quiet solitude?
Yes, of course. I mean, there are children that when they often do that, and I observe sometimes either in a kindergarten class or first or second grade, there are those children who really need to experience their world head on with a lot of force and a lot of they're very tactile learners, and they have a difficulty with understanding themselves in space. They don't quite know their own boundaries. So they may have tactile issues. They may need to work with a sensory integrationist so that they're contact with the world and their relationship to the world becomes a lot clearer, because obviously they're telling us by the way they're moving that they need a real extreme way of connecting with the world in order for it to make contact and to register.
That's a beautiful way to put it, an extreme way.
And, you know, it's not that it's bad or wrong.
No.
It's just that it can be hard for the other children in the world.
There's no judgment behind
it. Right, exactly. And they also can, and that can be easily remediated with some help and some work with a lot of different things that can be done. You want to look at nutrition. You want to look at their sleep patterns and what are they overstimulated in other ways and understimulated in some, you know, where is their balance? And it's kind of how do we help bring children into a healthy balance and a healthy breathing? And I always found it fascinating that children don't really establish their adult heart rate until around 9. And up until then, if you ever touch a little toddler's heart, it feels like a hummingbird.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just so fast. And we need to watch how much stimulation, how much sleep, how much play, big activity, large, quiet, you know, to
right.
balance the day.
To balance it between the small motor
yes.
and the gross motor.
Exactly.
But make sure you don't leave one of them out.
Right, right.
And that children aren't sitting Sitting.
Right,
sitting.
Exactly. It's deadening.
Yes.
And there's a lot, you know, there's so many things today that encourage that, and it's become a real difficulty. And I think it's really one of the core difficulties to what we call ADD or ADHD. And there are ways that help, and I think that there are many different directions we can go with it that I think that are different than just, you know, medication. But we have seen a huge shift, and maybe it's just that we're getting clearer on how to observe and look in terms of this labeling, and so we want to call it something. But I think that there were always children who were a lot more rambunctious or became bored easily, but I think that today's world does have some special and extreme demands on our children, and I think that they see things very early that they can't comprehend or that frighten them, especially mm-hmm. through media, not always intentionally.
I think Christopher was telling me about some research that you had read about children if they watch television or these video games when they're too young, that it interferes with, you know, that's where then they a lot of times will get branded as ADHD, you know,
mm-hmm. right,
and Ritalin will be introduced when really, you know, they should go back and do all of the things that they didn't get to do.
Very much so. I mean, I think that when children sit and watch television, their eyes lock and they do not track. That's one thing that can be very detrimental. Sure, they sit there and they kind of go into that hypnotic state. And, you know, people always talk about, well, Waldorf, they're the anti-TV people. But, but you know, there's a real sound reason behind that. And when a child is developing and they're gaining their knowledge and their input from the world through sense impressions, the television, computer, video games, not much is asked of them, really, and it's not human. It's a machine. They're really sitting in front of something that is mechanical. It's part of the material world. It's very hardening, mm-hmm. and it isn't in that sense warming, and there's nothing there that they can, but what I do see is that they will imitate exactly what they see. The younger child in kindergarten, if they watch a lot of media, they have no way of turning off those images. They just sit in their head, mm-hmm. and they come out at the most inopportune times, you know, in the middle right. of the market, in the middle of a quiet story time, in the middle of when they're supposed to be resting or going to sleep at night, the images come and they act them out over and over again because they're trying to digest right. what they saw.
I know some of the research that I have been reading is that it makes a terrific amount of difference. Well, first of all, kids under two shouldn't watch any. I didn't even realize that there were people who were, you know, two. But if children watch TV with their parents, watch television with their parent, there's a completely different result.
Well, it depends on the age. I still would have to say that I think that with their parent, if they're going to spend time together, why not play a game? You know, why not? Why not read a nice book together?
Yes, I'm not saying that this yeah. is the ultimate. Yeah. I'm just saying that if they're going to watch TV, sit down and watch it with them.
Well, I still would say that until the age of, say, 8 or 9.
Stay close to your mic.
Oh, until the age of 8 or 9, I don't really feel like that is the most valuable use of their time, frankly. I just feel like there's so much more to do. And because the parents today have so little quality time, they really don't have the same amount of time that they did if both parents are working and that's a necessity and that's the way their life is structured. It might be far meaningful if the child were helping prepare the dinner or they were working together on a project or they sat and talked. To me, that is interacting. If right. they're sitting in front of a TV watching something together, the child is still locked into the images that they're seeing. Mm-hmm. And for a very young child, it's filling their head with sometimes it's appropriate, but most of the time, quite frankly, I don't think producers, directors, and Disney has your child's best interest at heart. I just, that's my personal philosophy, and I may get a lot of flack for it, but that's been my experience. Yeah, I can take it. I've watched it for 30 years, and I've watched hundreds of children, and I can tell you it isn't in their best interest.
And the we will just have to leave that one there because we would go on and on.
Oh,
and we
want
to stick on our topic here.
Yeah.
The question now between movement and learning, between movement and learning language, between movement and mathematics, all of the research, you know, points to that.
Yes.
If you interfere with the movement, with the free flow of movement, you're interfering with the language development. And you're interfering with mathematical, with the development of a higher level mathematics, especially. And so I just do not understand with all of the developmental specialists, the PhDs, right?
Right. All the research, right?
Why we continue to see even schools, well, I hope none in California, with no recess.
Right.
Or this constant teaching facts to the test.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's unfortunate because it's counterproductive. It's going to boomerang. And to try and suppress the child's need to move. You can do a lot within the curriculum during the morning to bring movement into your lessons, always.
Oh, yes.
But there's also something that's very important about that out-breath of recess. You know, they all love recess because that's your out-breath. And then you come back in, you gather them up, and then you want to be able to still make a lesson that has movement first. You bring them into their body, you make the movement joyful and rhythmical with beautiful speech, and then you go to the head work because it's made sense. It's already traveled those pathways. Mm-hmm. They've already incarnated it into their being, into their body, into their physical body, from large motor to small. You know, I even have my children sometimes in my classes, we used to take off our shoes and socks and write with a big, you know, with a big
with
fat crayon. Yeah, with your toes. You
yeah.
do toe riding because you want to be in your fingertips and your toes.
Right. I can.
So it's fun.
I remember that at our school too. Yeah. And one of the goals was, can you move each toe separately?
Oh, yes. Can you pick up marbles? Can you put them over here?
Yes.
You know, it's
and
very
now
important.
I think there are some rules about you that you can't even take your shoes off in some schools.
Yeah, I could see where that kind, you know, and for those children who are sensitive about that, or they have tactile issues, or they're just a little embarrassed, they could keep their socks on, but it made it
no,
a little difficult.
I don't think
but
it's the
generally,
children.
And
I
know
I
that
think it's a health, you know,
a health
thing.
Issue for some.
Yeah, in some schools.
I suppose, you know,
sad,
that might be difficult.
Sad, because the feet,
but,
you know, so important.
Yeah.
And then I have issues when I see children walking on concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and moving on concrete, you know, especially, you know, doing gross motor stuff, because it just kills your feet, kills mm-hmm. your legs. They need that. They need something that breathes underneath them when they're doing that movement. So I don't understand that either. I don't understand the movement on concrete.
That can be difficult. I love to see children playing on the grass and doing all kinds of climbing on building of forts and
yes.
that kind of work, and sand. Sand is wonderful.
Sand
playing
and water
in the sand. And all those experiences really help stimulate those neural pathways again. All the things that we see children doing, when you see them spinning on a swing, that helps the fluid in the in the cochlear membrane in the inner ear. Then it goes again to our balance system and helps to establish a good, healthy balance system.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see children in a classroom who are tipping on their chairs, you know, almost makes you seasick, you know,
yes.
watching the classroom with the three or four who love to waver in their chairs. They're just really telling you that they need a little more vestibular work. They really have balance issues, and they're just trying to find their center. You know, they're trying to get themselves settled in, and they're trying to get in touch with who they are and where they are in the world. And so that's why things like jump roping, swinging. Swings are wonderful. And, you know, if you have a little baby, you can rock them. Rocking is just, it's there for a reason.
Oh,
and it's
yes.
so good for them.
Oh, yes.
So swinging is great. And the children can handle some, though, if they have really strong issues, they might get a little dizzy and they don't care for spinning. It's because they probably do have, you know, inner ear issues, and that needs to be looked at. But, you know, that is something that can be really, really important and lead to, you know, good balance is very, very important in terms of learning. And so all of those movements that we see children do organically and naturally all help to stimulate those neural pathways again that then help diminish those reflexes that were there as an infant that we no longer need and that we'll actually get in a child's way. And so those kinds of reflexes need to dissolve, and then they can develop from their large motor into their small motor. And the small motor then allows a child to tie their shoe easily, to be able to jump rope. Children don't jump rope much anymore.
It's the refinement.
Yeah, refinement.
The refinement
yeah.
of
finger
the, gross,
knitting.
The
yeah.
gross motor and the refinement of the fine motor.
Right.
And the more refined, then you see, at least I've observed, the more refined the fine and the gross motor, the more the child is able to read and to do mathematics and to get excited about research. And the child who struggles, you know, if you help them through it, help them refine those muscles, help them refine both gross and fine motor, then it comes. But it's hard for parents to trust you
right.
when you say we need to work with the movement
right.
of these large and small muscles, and then it will come
right
because it's hard for them to trust, you know,
right, that they will develop in that way if they're, you know, if they're given these opportunities. There's a lot parents can do too. You know, when you're building all those systems, the brain needs, you know, healthy food to build these neural pathways. And one of the things that we look at in the kindergarten and all the way through the grades is healthy nutrition, good rest. Sleep is so important, and that also helps to nourish all of those pathways. But to get back to movement again, there are so many things that they can do. You know, a lot of children can enjoy swimming, drama, music. Music is so helpful for children for math skills. All the Waldorf teachers for, you know, 80 years have known this, and
oh, yes.
the connection between math and music.
Oh, yes.
But all of a sudden, researchers are coming out and going, well, say, we shouldn't cut those programs because the children who get music have better math skills.
Oh, yeah.
So it's an interesting phenomenon.
But somehow
phenomenon.
That research hasn't flowed down. I hate to interrupt
That's
you
right.
because I'm enjoying it so much, but it's 7:32, and I promised people... on the atomic clock, 7:32 and 44 seconds. We're going to take a little music break, and then we're going to come back and continue, and we will open the lines, and the phone numbers here are 895-2448, or if you're calling from out of the area, 1-800-499-7117, and I'll announce those numbers again. We're going to take a little music break here with some great children's dance music. Here we go. was fun. Molly told me that you guys used to do that Russian troika when you made the maypole at Waldorf.
Right. It's been a long-standing tradition. We always start our maypole, our May Day festival with that particular dance with all the children dancing together. It's so
beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, let's go on. I'm going to announce the numbers again. If you want to talk to us, we're at 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. This is KZYX and Education Now, and we're here with Marcia Titchener talking about Waldorf education and the importance of movement. And Marcia, before we get going too much further, let's talk about good books.
Yes, I would like to recommend a couple things. There are so many things. One thing that people could do, if they so wish, is to check with the Rudolf Steiner College bookstore, because they will send you a brochure and of all their newest books, and they just have some great stuff. And their number is 916-961-8729.
Would you repeat that?
Yes. That's 916-961-8729. Or you can go to www.steinercollege.edu. So that's another place you can go for information. Again, you can go to www.whywaldorfworks.org, and their website is full of interesting things. That's the OSNA website. And the Why Waldorf Works, those three words there are capital W's, just so you know. Then in our area, I really do want to mention a wonderful approach to neurodevelopment and learning, and that is called HANDLE, and that is the initials of the Holistic Approach to Neurodevelopment and Learning Efficiency. And we're very fortunate in our area in Ukiah to have a practitioner and a person who is well trained in handle work, and her name is Daphne McNeil. And I'm sure she wouldn't mind if I gave her phone number, if I may. And her number is 463-2878.
Repeat that, Marcia.
463-2878.
And she's on the web, right?
And yes, she is. There's also you can find out more about HANDLE if you want to investigate it first. If you have a child that you're a little concerned about how they're progressing and you might want to look for another approach, and maybe their teacher has come to you and said, oh, gee, we think they should be on Ritalin tomorrow, and that frightens you, then you might want to, or you might feel that you want some other approaches, please go to www.handle.org. And I think you'll be really, really surprised and amazed and pleased at what you learn there, because Judith Bluestone has formulated an entire set of wonderful exercises and movement activities that are all fun, enjoyable, and parents can do them with their children. They're very much a part of the process in helping their children develop and grow. And I think that it's a great approach. So that's something that can be very helpful for children who with movement issues or other issues, learning issues. Also, for teachers, there's a great book called Take Time by Mary Nash Wortham. Take Time.
By
Mary Nash Wortham.
Wortham.
Yes, W-O-R-T-H-A-M, and Jean Hunt. And again, you can get a lot of these movement activity books from the Rudolf Steiner College, because movement is such a big part of how we bring things in the classroom. There's all kinds of wonderful rhythmic games, beanbag games, stick games, math games, all kinds of wonderful things that you can do with the class to get them up and moving, especially, you know, how children are. They can sometimes get that glazed over look, and you know there just hasn't been enough activity, and it's time to get them up and moving. So that's a great resource, and we don't own the market on good teaching. That you know, can happen anywhere in any classroom, as long as you take the effort and the time to really recognize who these children are.
Yes.
And what they really need today.
And I think what's important is that there are lots of choices out there.
Yes, there are.
There are and that there be lots of choices for children and for parents in terms of education. That's the most important thing.
Right. Oh, and then if parents do want to come and see a demonstration teaching of grades 1 through 4, the school, the Waldorf School of Mendocino County, is having a demonstration on August 15th from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's at the school. Please contact David Fissel if you have any more questions. He is our enrollment coordinator. And the number of the school is 485-8719, and you can reach him online too. So he's generally at the school in the mornings, even in the summertime. So there you go. Those are some places to start. There's a lot of good information. Oh, and if I might add, anything by Jane Healy. She is a
neurodevelopment.
I went to a wonderful conference on brain development at Dominican College with Jane Healy and Bonnie Rivers, who's another exceptional resource teacher. And they both had something very interesting to say about video game and computer addiction, particularly video game addiction.
This is what Christopher wanted to be sure you spoke about.
Yeah, if I can just touch on that very quickly, because I think it's really important
for
parents to hear this today, especially those children any age, but especially pre-adolescence. What happens is when a child is playing a game, it does not matter the content. The activity and the brain is the same. Certain endorphins are released, and the child feels a certain state of well-being. It's a little bit like a drug. And the more you do it, the more you want it. And after you stop, you feel like, well, can I go use the game? Can I go play the game again, Mom? Can I go do it again? And there's a certain restlessness and a letdown afterwards. And then, again, they want to play or use the computer and play that game again, or Game Boy, or whatever it is that they then want to do. And it always, always produces that same result. And it's interesting that just lately, psychiatrists, psychologists, and doctors, and pediatricians are all debating terminology. Is it addictive behavior, or is it not addictive behavior? Well, what do you think, Athena? I mean, if a child, stops something and then within 20 minutes they need to do it again, uh-huh. and children are locked up in their rooms for hours in front of their computer, mm-hmm. then what is it telling you? And
well,
they're very unhappy.
I can see that someone who is very a gamey could say, well, you said repetition was important, Marcia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't call that addictive behavior.
Yeah.
I'm playing devil's advocate here, of course.
I know.
But I do think that it can be excessive. I think that you always have to have limits on things like this. That if the parent is really involved and watching, and that it will be all right. It's this, I don't need to worry because he's quiet or she's quiet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's the problem. If they're quiet, well, then just don't be concerned. But many times when they're quiet, you need to be the most concerned.
Yeah.
So
thanks for that clarification. I think that's true.
Yeah.
That as the parent, you have to be very aware. And it's fairly tricky these days because you can think that you have put a blocker on certain websites or certain, things that are going to pop up.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always work that way because they're very tricky. And you just need to know what your child is watching, what they're doing, and how long they're doing that.
Right.
And it can become quite addictive.
Right. It's sort of like you're concerned about the people they're with.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And the school that they go
doing.
To. And so shouldn't you be concerned about what they're reading, what they're watching, what they're listening to? That's the way I look at it.
That's absolutely correct.
That's
our job. So.
There we have a caller, Marcia.
Okay.
Here we go. Hello, you're on KZYX. Hello, you're on KZYX. Hello, caller? Caller, are you there? We lost you. Please try again if you called us. Call in again. And we'll try to pick you up. Supposedly, this Gentner was working, and so calling again. But we're winding down here. I will announce the phone numbers one more time. It's 895-2448. Or there's someone on line one. Well, we don't usually pick up line one because it's for someone in the office and it's a rollover, so I won't pick up that line. But we're at 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117 if you want to try calling us. And here we go. Let's try it again. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for the show. It's such a great show, and your guests and all the great work it sounds like you're doing with kids. And I've just been doing a bunch of research on the reading and different standards and why the United States ranks very low and California ranks among the lowest of the states. And they're trying, you know, there's all these educators and government officials are scrambling and trying and putting lots of money into researching why this is happening. And I just find it so interesting that everything I read, the majority of the voices are trying to find new ways to cram more information into our children.
right.
And it's funny because that's all they've been doing, and that's obviously not working. And instead of getting better, our standards and how kids can learn is dropping. I really appreciate what your guest was saying about television. And I think, you know, if parents, it can be overwhelming, all the things we hear we should be doing for our kids, and it may sound overwhelming, but if you just look at just living more of a natural life and tapping more into what our natural intuition is of what is a natural life, you know, we naturally do spend more time outdoors, did more physical activity, you know, did more creative things, spent more time with elders, and if you just, you don't have to get special information or anything. You can just go towards that way. A lot of these behaviors and problems that kids have really can fall away, and really what they need to be addressed can really come to the surface because, you know, we all have things that do need to be addressed. But and I just, one article I just did read that was really interesting about the this one school was really saying how great it was that they're starting to rate higher in their schools and, you know, off the No Child Left Behind marks that they're supposed to reach. And they said, well, it's great. We've cut music and we've cut PE, you know, about movement. It's like, yes, now we're doing 90 minutes less of PE, you know, and we've cut that out in the morning so they can do 90 more minutes of math and 90 mm-hmm. more minutes of reading. And, you know, and maybe their kids are scoring higher temporarily, but it's like, at what cost? And do these kids know who they are more?
Right.
Are they happier? I mean, that's one thing is, yes, kids can perform, but by and large, they found that these kids that can actually really perform and do best in school are actually the kids that are really good at certain skills, but they enjoy learning the least sometimes.
Right, that's the thing is, so, if you're teaching to the test, I don't know why we're getting an echo, but we are. If you're teaching to the test, then that's not learning.
Yeah.
That's not learning.
Yeah. So anyway, I really appreciate it. I just, it makes me crazy. I don't know why, with all these studies and everything, that they're not really finding out this information that a lot of really great cutting-edge educators, Rudolf Steiner did it, you know, how many hundred years ago,
uh-huh.
That they don't, this information is not new stuff. It's
no,
out
it
there,
isn't.
It's been proven. And
it is. It's
right.
out there, it's been proven. And that's why these developmentalists are up in arms and they're trying to get people to listen. But you know how hard it is for them to get media.
Yeah, and I have to say in Japan, too, where they do score quite high, it'd be great to do a study on why in the countries, the developed countries, that the kids are doing well in education and scoring higher or whatever, seem coming out more educated, that they actually really value music. I mean, every kid there takes music. And they also really value PE. They all do kendo,
art and gymnastics.
And gymnastics, and it's a very stringent part of their curriculum. So I find that really interesting.
I'd like to also add that in many countries that score high, supposedly in you know, and they have a lot of their students go on to universities or whatever. Many times their entrance age to elementary school is 6 and a half or 7.
Yeah.
Ours is 5 and going down.
And which I think is crazy.
It's absolutely, it's just totally counter to what everything we know, everything that has ever been proven in neurological development and research, and how children learn when they're ready to learn and what they can really learn. You can teach them anything, but like you say, at what cost? Yeah. And they become quite stressed. And what to me the proof is in the pudding later on. How do they do as young adults? Do they know who they are? Are they what is their drama? What do they love? What are they
and do they know what makes them satisfied?
What is their passion?
Yeah, exactly. That's the word I'm looking for. You know, what is it they're going to do in the world? Are they going to unfold and know in which way they can contribute? And all of the rest it's just little bits and bytes of information.
Of trivia.
That
will change tomorrow.
I'm going to go and let your guest finish up because she's so wonderful. And I just want to say that book I do suggest that I'm reading right now, which is so fabulous, is The Schools Our Children Deserve by Alfie Cohn.
Alfie's wonderful.
And it puts it all in a nutshell, and he does it really well, and it's all well backed up research.
But Alfie's been on our show.
I heard that, and I want to get him. This is LaViva.
Hi, LaViva.
I want to get him too. I need to talk to you about
him. He is wonderful, and you know, his my favorite book of his is one where he really goes into that human nature. Most people say human nature in the pejorative, meaning negative. But really, most people are great, good people. So human nature is really a great thing.
We have an urge to seek the good.
Yes.
I believe that.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for your show, Athena. It's so wonderful
to
hear.
Well, thank you, LaViva. And I wish you were here to meet Marcia. She's such a treat.
Maybe someday.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Well, that was wonderful.
Yep.
Well, we have to wind down because it's 7:51 and I need to do housekeeping, but it's been just so delightful.
Oh, thank you, Athena. I've really enjoyed it. And I know that there are so many dedicated parents and teachers out there who just, you know, want to help as much as they can to help our children, because they are our gift and they are our future. And I know that they are just exceptional. I've seen the most remarkable young people coming along everywhere. And I'm hopeful. And I believe, like your last caller, that the world is good. And when we stand before each other as one human being to another, then we can really realize wonderful things together, and our humanity will raise ourselves up to where we should be.
I agree. I agree. Thank you so much, Marcia.
Thank you.
And thank you, Cliff, for sharing her with me tonight.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night, Marcia. Well, thank you, everyone. I want to tell you that a few things here. Hold on 1 minute. Something very important to me that I wanted to announce to you is that there's a benefit for KZYX Garden Show host Cherie Christensen to help with medical expenses. Dinner will include Italian and Thai vegetarian options as well as a Hawaiian pit roast. Phone 937-3194, that's 937-3194, and ask for Kathy O'Grady for more information. It'll be Saturday, July 28th at the Casper Community Center. A dinner, boogie, and art auction for Cherie Christensen. We're thinking of you, Cherie, and sending our love. Now, KZYXNZ in the Arena Theater presents Sustainability Film Festival, 6 documentary films with ecological themes, followed by panel discussions on Monday evenings at 6 p.m., now through July 30th at the Arena Theater in Point Arena. This week's film, Thirst, based on the book by Alan Cinto and Deborah Kaufman, tells the story of communities in Bolivia, India, and the United States that are asking fundamental questions about water ownership as water becomes the most valuable global resource of the 21st century. Following the film, there will be a panel discussion by Matrix for Change. I didn't give you Marcia's contact information. That's okay to do, huh, Marcia?
Oh, yes.
And so it's C-Titch, C-T-I-T-C-H.
No, yes. C-T-I-C-H, C-Titch, @instawave.net. All lowercase.
Say it again.
C-Titch, C, just the letter C, not S-E-E.
Okay.
C-Titch, T-I-C-H, at instawave.net.
Thank you for that. I wanted to be sure to get that out. And, of course, my contact information is Hermes, H-E-R-M-E-S, at pacific.net. You can listen to this show at my website and all the shows we've done here on Education Now at pacificsites.com/TildaHermes, pacificsites.com/TildaHermes. And I want to thank the staff at KZYXNZ and the Hermeneutic Institute who produced this show for all their support and love. The High Pocketty Ox in Boonville and KZYXNZ present OxFest 2007, 3 days of local music to benefit KZYXNZ. July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, featuring Michael Arago's band, Hoohy Arago, the Yukaholics, the Smokey Joes with Jimmy Humble, the Brown Brothers Blues Band, Ragtime Rick, and many more. You can get more information by calling 895-2792 or by visiting highpocketyox.com. And then I also wanted to tell you that KZYXNZ and the Ukiah Skate Park proudly present lead singer of the Dead Kennedys, Jello Biafra, in his first North of San Francisco spoken word performance on Friday, July 20th at 7 p.m. at the Ukiah Conference Center. All proceeds from the sliding scale ticket prices will go to benefit both KZYXNZ and the Ukiah Skate Park. Tickets only available at the door, so get there. The doors will open at 7. He's going to be on at 8. More information by calling 895-2324 or by visiting kzyx.org. So that's wonderful. And tomorrow morning is the Hot Flash Show at 9 a.m. and Corporations and Democracy at 1 p.m. You won't want to miss those either. Well, it's 7:56, and I want to tell you that within the next couple of months, I am hoping I have some great shows lined up for you, and I'm going to be going to the AMS conference in October, Shared Visions, and I will be hopefully bringing you back words from the gentleman named Richard Louv, who wrote Last Child of the Woods, or Nature Deficit Disorder, and it's a fascinating book, so I'm very excited to bring you that, and maybe some surprises that I'm working on, so I can't really announce them to you now. But I thank you very much. Someone else is calling us. Shall we try it at this late hour? Okay, we will. Hello, you're on KZYX.
Yes, are you
going to
have Peter Criss on tonight?
Pardon me?
Are you having Peter Criss from KISS on tonight?
Yes, he will be on tonight.
Could I wait in the queue, or do I have to keep trying to get in?
Well, you'll have to wait until after 8 o'clock.
Okay, it's like 2 minutes of.
Yep, that's right. So you're just going to have to wait, though, until after 8 o'clock. Thanks so much for calling. Yes, and coming up after Earth and Sky is going to be Reality Check, and they are having that guy from KISS on. What's his name, David?
Peter Criss.
Peter Criss. Yes, yes. A phone conversation with Peter Criss, so you won't want to miss that either. So, good night, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Education Now. We'll see you next month, and here's coming Earth and Sky.
Earth and Sky.
Thursday, July 19th. Tomorrow, Mercury will swing